From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Clinton and Trump close in. Cruz names Carly, airstrikes in Aleppo. Dennis Hastert sentenced, and Beyonce's groundbreaking new visual album, Lemonade. Hillary Clinton scored big wins in four of the five states that voted on Tuesday. Her message to Sanders supporters on election night, unity.
Whether you support Senator Sanders or you support me, there's much more that unites us than divides us.
Donald Trump talked foreign policy. Lots of messages, many contradictory, but the headlines, America first and reliable.
To our friends and allies, I say America is going to be strong again. America is going to be reliable again.
And Beyonce sweeping the culture out with a new visceral visual album. Here's Hold Up from Lemonade.
Hold up, they don't love you like I love you. Slow down, they don't love you like I love you.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with David Sanger of the New York Times, Jennifer Jacobs of Bloomberg Politics, and On Point news analyst Jack Beattie. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you see now with Clinton, Trump, Sanders, Cruz, Carly? And what about that John Boehner and Lucifer? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With me now in the studio, David Sanger, national security correspondent for the New York Times. Just back, I mean just back, like the middle of this last night from South Korea. David Sanger, welcome back to the USA. Thanks for coming in to join us.
Great to be with you again.
You are a trooper, a hero. And with us from Washington, Jennifer Jacobs, national political correspondent for Bloomberg Politics. She covers it all, Republicans and Trump in particular. Jennifer, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you here. And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beattie joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, David, and Jennifer.
Let us go directly to John Boehner. He comes out of retirement off the golf course. He's out at Stanford talking with Professor David Kennedy there Wednesday night. Former House Speaker, who, of course, had to grapple with Ted Cruz when he was mixing it up there. Kennedy asks him, John Boehner, what he thinks of Ted Cruz. This is audio courtesy of the Stanford Daily.
So how about saying your opinions on some of the other people running for the highest office? How about Ted Cruz? Lucifer in the flesh.
Lucifer, the devil in the flesh. A little bit more from John Boehner. What really, John? What do you really mean, John?
I've never worked with a more miserable son of over my dead body will be breathless.
Holy smokes. Jennifer Jacobs, please interpret for us. We know there's bad blood, but wow, what just happened there?
Yeah, it really does accentuate the fact that Ted Cruz has people in Washington, D.C. who are not very appreciative of him. He did try to turn that back around, and I know that his supporters liked the way he did that. He was trying to say, listen, it's not me that the speaker is unhappy with. He's taking a jab at the American people. He's dishonoring you guys. You guys should take this as a personal insult. So when John Boehner calls me Lucifer, it's actually directed at you.
Remind us what Ted Cruz did to John Boehner that made John ready to say he's Lucifer, the most miserable son of a bleep that he's ever worked with?
It sounds like people in Washington, D.C. and Congress think that Ted Cruz is difficult to work with, that he digs in his heels, that he doesn't have an especially pleasant personality, that he's hard to negotiate with. He's pulled some stunts that they think were just publicity stunts, done things that made the leaders look bad. Cruz, of course, said, I barely talked to John Boehner. I don't know what I did, but I think he does.
David Sanger, you know all the backways and marble hallways of Washington. What did you hear in those Boehner comments?
Well, the most remarkable thing about this is that the man who was Speaker of the House finally decided to speak.
Yes.
This is the kind of thing that Boehner would tell our congressional correspondents, you know, off the record with a glass of wine, as Carl Hulse wrote so wonderfully in the Times this morning, but wouldn't say in public because
yes.
he had to try to hold an entire party together. And I think Jennifer got at the essence of the reason that only one member of the U.S. Senate has actually said something nice about Ted Cruz mm-hmm. during this run. And it's that his view has been so ideological that the concept of compromise, which is, of course, what makes any legislative body work, mm-hmm. is to him sellout.
To Cruz.
And this is exactly what makes him so appealing to the right wing of the Republican Party. And it's exactly what has so angered all of his colleagues.
And all that's waiting back there. Jack Beatty, still, that's pretty remarkable. Here comes Boehner out of retirement sitting with your old pal David Kennedy out there.
Yeah.
Wow, Lucifer.
Yes. You know, in fairness, Boehner really lost his job on account of a claque of, you know, ultras who were simply under Ted Cruz's sway, who, you know, brought the government to a standstill in 2013 and who were a bane in Boehner's side thereafter. So there's a reason, particular reason, for the bad blood. But, you know, when you look at other comments about Cruz, Lindsey Graham, if you kill Ted Cruz on the Senate floor and the trial was in the Senate, no one would convict his killer.
That's pretty wild.
Graham is a Republican. How about Peter King, Republican? I'll take cyanide if he gets nominated.
But where does this leave us, Jennifer? I mean, John Boehner, I guess, is now supporting Donald Trump. But Donald Trump has got a huge portion of the Republican Party saying, no, no, never Trump.
Right. You're starting to hear more people say, fine, let's make it never Clinton instead of never Trump. There's starting to be some movement. I did talk to some Trump operatives, some campaign operatives yesterday and this morning, and they said they're getting more and more phone calls from people who were very against Donald Trump in just in recent months, now calling out of the woodwork saying, what can we do to help? So I think, you know, John Boehner doesn't say these things lightly. He knew that these comments were going to get huge
publicity. Oh, that's a grenade. That's a landmine, sure.
Yes, and he knew it perfectly well. So he was sending a message. Keep in mind, he is friends with John Kasich. He probably would endorse Kasich if he could. It sounds like, you know,
Ohio
he's saying—
guys.
Exactly. He's saying, I would vote for Donald Trump in the general election. I would not vote for Ted Cruz. He's still being a little bit cagey, but people are very much reading into that and coming around to Donald Trump a little bit. There are still some holdouts, there's no doubt.
Boy, there's some big holdouts. I mean, a swivet in some parts of the Republican Party. This was an interview Sunday. ABC's Jonathan Carl talked with conservative political activist, famous, infamous donor Charles Koch, suggested that Hillary Clinton, and of course, Koch and the Koch brothers who have supported Republicans right, left, and center all over the place, Koch saying here, Charles Koch, Hillary Clinton might be a better president than Republicans currently contending for the nomination?
Was it possible another Clinton could be better than another Republican
it's
the
possible.
Next time around?
It's possible.
You couldn't see yourself supporting Hillary Clinton, could you?
Well, we would have to believe her actions would be quite different than her rhetoric. Let me put it that way.
But it wasn't a no, David Sanger, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the best line a colleague of mine taught me when I moved to Washington more than 20 years ago is that sometimes the news is in the silences. It's not in the statements.
Yes.
And I think that long silence that you just heard from Mr. Koch, that was it. But just go back briefly to Jennifer's good observation about the people who were saying no way a month or a month and a half ago. You have a large number of Republicans wandering around, sitting at think tanks, companies around Washington who've been out of power since the day George W. Bush took off in a helicopter.
Yes.
Okay. And they have to consider the question that if Mr. Trump won, could they bring themselves to forget about everything they've been saying for the past 6 months and work up a line that goes a little like this, because I've heard this time and again.
Okay.
You know, I don't think he's the best one for the presidency, but for the good of the country, I would come in and help guide him to some policies that would make sense.
But what would it mean for all the orthodoxies of 30 years that he just doesn't necessarily hold?
That's right. And so the big question is, at the end of this election, whether Donald Trump wins or loses, what is the Republican Party if he has been their standard bearer? Do they forget about this and like deal with it as like a
timeout,
bad night, or do they turn around and say, you know, this is the pathway we have toward change in the fundamentals of the party?
Jack, a one-night stand, a one-term stand with Donald Trump, and then they're back to being the old Republicans, or something else, something bigger going on?
Something bigger and something worse. The worse is signalized today in a piece in Politico talking to political experts in swing states and uniformly in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, Virginia. The Republican experts say this guy is going to drag down, he's going to lose in our state, lose big, and hurt people below him on the ticket. And there are local reasons for that. He's seen negatively by 7 in 10 women. But beyond that, there are structural reasons that are going to hurt the party for a long time to come, and that Trump is going to really exacerbate. And, you know, that is, his poll this week has him seen negatively by 3 in 4 millennials. That's the future. That's the largest American generation now. It's 75 million people. And these people are going to vote against Trump, according to this, and that's going to be a habit that's going to last. Not only are they rejecting Trump, they're rejecting the orthodoxies of the GOP.
I got it, Jack, but what about millennials turned off by Bernie's difficulty right now? And we hear from them here and, having really not very friendly Clinton thoughts on that side of the party line.
There's got to be some mending offenses there. But I think Hillary's point is generally right. The gap between Bernie and Hillary is so much less than the chasm, not only between Trump and the millennials, but between the Republican Party and millennials.
But the risk to Hillary is that the millennials don't come out and vote at all.
Yes. And for Trump? What?
Well, for Trump, the risk is, running a general election is a very different thing than running in primaries. And suddenly we're down to states like California and New York. Yep. And, and that's going to be hard math.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Trump and Clinton wins, lots of them. Cruz and Carly. Fiorina Boehner calls Cruz Lucifer in the flesh. North Korea missile test, again, airstrikes on a children's hospital in Aleppo in Syria. Jennifer Jacobs is with us, national political reporter for Bloomberg Politics. David Sanger is here, national security correspondent just back from Korea for the New York Times. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. Are you ready now to say it's Trump versus Clinton in the general, or not yet? Not yet. What do you think of John Boehner on Cruz? Do you get Donald Trump's foreign policy now after his foreign policy address this week? And, of course, we had Ted Cruz this week looking for a win in Indiana after Trump swept all 5 primaries this week in the Northeast. At a rally in Indianapolis on Wednesday, the big news, drum roll, he announced he was picking former rival Carly Fiorina as a running mate should he win the Republican nomination. Here, he called Donald Trump a bully and praised Fiorina for never backing down in confrontations with him.
One of the great principles of bullies, they feed off of fear. They feed off of people who will cower in the corner when they yell and scream and insult and holler and curse, and they don't know what to do when a strong, powerful woman stands up and says, I am not afraid.
And here is that woman coming right up on stage with Ted Cruz.
Hillary Clinton has made her millions selling access and influence from inside the system. And Donald Trump has made his billions buying people like Hillary Clinton. They are not going to challenge the system. They are the system.
Jennifer Jacobs, what do you make of this week? The Carly announcement, is it Hail Mary, Hail Carly? Does Ted Cruz still have a chance?
Yeah, it does kind of smell like desperation a little bit. He was trying to overpower the news that Donald Trump had just won big in 5 northeastern states. So one operative had texted me on primary night at night and said, Ted Cruz really needs to make news tomorrow. Sure enough, he did. He comes out with this big announcement that he would like Carly Fiorina to be his vice president. Now, she is obviously from California. That's,
Though
Cruz
she's
calls
fared
it
very, very poorly in elections in California.
That's true, but she did fare well in a very tough primary in California, and she outperformed registration in the general election there. So those Republicans in California do like her. It doesn't hurt Ted Cruz. That's the bottom line.
I don't know what he gets out of it. Do you think it makes a difference to Indiana voters? Is it a big signal just to get the headline?
Probably. Republicans across the country actually really do like Carly Fiorina. Mm-hmm. From the beginning, mm-hmm. they have liked the thought of her debating with Hillary Clinton. She's very abrasive and very – she has a way of taking down Hillary Clinton in her arguments that Republicans just love. Women don't find Carly Fiorina – Republican women don't find her offensive like some of them thought about Sarah Palin, for example. Mm-hmm. She's a little
tough.
Bit corporate.
She's smart. She may not be your type, or maybe, but she's – yeah, she's not a Palin, that's for sure.
Exactly. She's a little bit corporate, but people really respond to her. They do like her.
Of course, in a general, she wouldn't be debating Hillary Clinton. But yet, if it were a ticket, she'd be on it. Woman right there, Michael in Boston. Thanks for calling, Michael. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think Ted Cruz has been treated very unfairly by the press. I mean, they've enabled Donald Trump. They've basically enabled Donald Trump to dominate everything the press has, whether at the debates in the early beginning. As Alan Dershowitz said, he's like the top 10 most brilliant people he's ever had in his class. And Alan Dershowitz is not,
no fool.
He's no fool. And I think it's very unfair of how he's been a very class act. And I think, the lying Ted thing and that, if any candidate had the amount of coverage that Donald Trump had.
Well, it's hard to match Trump for coverage, but then it wasn't the media that called Ted Cruz Lucifer in the flesh yesterday. It was his former colleague on the other side of Capitol Hill, John Boehner. But, Michael, let me take it. Let me get one more. We hear it loud and clear. Jamie is calling. Hi, Jamie, you're on.
Oh, hey, Tom. How are you?
Good.
My point is that I believe Cruz is far more damaging to both the Republican Party and to the country.
Why?
I think that years ago, the Republicans in the form of Reagan made a Faustian bargain with the Christians, and now to mix a metaphor, the tail is wagging the dog.
I'm all over the place here. Lucifer,
sort of the embodiment of that Goldwater thing where if we let preachers take over the Republican Party, will become a Christian party.
But you've got a lot of people who responded to that, and they've come out for Ted Cruz in primaries. There are a lot of people who want that message.
Well, right, which concerns me greatly. I think that Trump will do some damage, but not the damage that Cruz would do.
Jamie, we got it. Let me get one more, and I'll bring it to my panel. Laverne in Fairfield, Iowa. Laverne, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Oh. This is scary. I think Trump is a loose cannon, and I think that Cruz wants to be the Christian Ayatollah. Now, if you take the money that Hillary got from those three talks, was it to Citibank, and you divide it by my annual Social Security income, that comes out to 70 years worth of my annual Social Security income.
Wow, okay.
So that leaves Bernie, and it doesn't look like he's going to make it. So I'm disenchanted.
Laverne,
and
we
I'm
hear
76.
It. Yeah, Laverne, I really appreciate the way you put it there. I mean, David Sanger, Laverne is not the only one who looks out across this field. You got Sanders supporters this week. You got layoffs there as he heads toward California. Says he's still in it, but you've got this dissent and dissension and confusion within the Republican Party. Hillary's out front, but you hear Laverne like, "Where's you got a loose cannon?" She says a Christian Ayatollah, and a woman who's taking money from banks. It's 70 times her annual income.
So in an incredibly odd political year, and I'm not a reporter who's spent a lot of time covering politics. Mm-hmm. I do more policy.
Yep.
What strikes me is you've got a group of candidates who have extraordinarily high negatives, and people on both sides are having a hard time getting enthused, which is odd in what's an open election, one in which a presidential incumbent is not running.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference between Mr. Cruz and Mr. Trump is that Mr. Cruz is highly ideological, as we have seen, and that was behind the Boehner comments.
Mm-hmm. More pragmatic wheeler dealer.
Mr. Trump is a wheeler dealer, and the question about him is whether he's got – that we don't understand his principles at all, right? So in an odd way, within the same party, you've got the two contenders out here are at the other ends of the spectrum. And the one who has brought up the most enthusiasm among those crowds, of course, is Bernie Sanders, who, as your caller just pointed out, seems to be sort of easing his way out of this.
Well, we'll see. He says he'll fight on, and we'll hear some of that. Daniel in Kentucky, Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Daniel, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Pretty well, Daniel. What are you up to?
I'm just driving down the road, delivering this freight, trying to keep this country running.
All right, keep it running. What do you see in the politics, Daniel?
If you don't like Trump, fine. If you don't like Cruz, fine. But if Trump wins the nomination, I believe Kasich and Cruz need to tell all of their supporters and the rest of Congress and the House need to get behind the nominee, whether they like him or not, because we cannot have a third or fourth or possibly fifth term of Obama politics. We will be in civil war within 10 years. That's just a prediction.
Why, Daniel? What's the conflict that you think just it would be unbearable?
Look at the Target scandal going on right now. Men going into ladies' bathrooms with little girls, and everyone's okay with that?
You're talking about Target saying it would let transgender people choose which bathroom they used, and for you that just doesn't cut it.
No, I don't believe so. I've got a young daughter. I don't care if he's got heels and a dress and lipstick on. What if he's actually a pedophile going in there?
Daniel, we've got it. You drive safe there. We've got culture issues on the table, and we hear that, Daniel. We've got economic issues driving so much of this. Big action on the Democrat side as well this week. Bernie Sanders got Rhode Island, but Hillary got everything, all the other four, everything else. Here she was acknowledging, this is interesting, kind of reaching out to Sanders supporters, acknowledging the role that Bernie Sanders has played in shaping the issues of the 2016 election. Hillary Clinton.
I applaud Senator Sanders and his millions of supporters for challenging us to get unaccountable money out of our politics and giving greater emphasis to closing the gap of inequality. And I know together we will get that done.
Jack Beatty, can Hillary Clinton pick up the Bernie Sanders flag? She's sort of putting his issues right out front there, as she has a lot, even using a lot of his language on the trail, and effectively draw in his supporters and run with it.
Well, she doesn't have the kind of leverage that past nominees have had. I mean, Barack Obama could bring her into his tent in 2008 because she had a future. She looked forward to a future in the Democratic Party. She understood that she had to, you know, go through the motions, and more than that, she delivered to be able to secure that future. Bernie Sanders is at nearly 74. He does not have a political future. He has been in the Democratic Party. He has been an independent. Now, he could be a chairman of a committee, I believe the Finance Committee, if the Democrats won the Senate, which is more possible with Trump as the nominee. Mm-hmm. So the Democrats have something there, but they can't say vice president. They can't say big appointment in the administration. And you know, they can't look to Bernie's futurity because Bernie is all about now. So they're going to have to give way on symbolism and on the platform. Now, whether that's going to be enough for Bernie, I don't know. But I expect you're going to hear, you know, we'll get that $15 minimum wage. Hillary has been at 12. I expect she's going to be raised now. And issues like that. I can't imagine, though. He's going to insist, as he said it, he would in one interview, on her going whole hog with national health care. That would seem to be a bridge too far.
Watch for that convergence. Larry in Kingston, Wisconsin. Larry, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm really happy about the Republican Party. They're down to Lucifer and the birther. You know, Lucifer cost us about $26 billion shutting down the government.
Ted Cruz, yeah, okay.
And the birther ran Barack Obama's, tried to run Barack Obama's name into the dirt.
Doesn't look like it's hurt him, Donald Trump, much, Larry.
What?
Does not look like it's hurt him much, having done that.
Well, no, I think Donald Trump has exposed the Republican Party for what it really is. You know, Donald Trump fits the glove of the Republican Party.
So who are you for, Larry? Who are you for? We hear who you're against.
For Hillary Clinton, 100%. She'll be very good for our country domestically and especially abroad to keep us safe. And she'll be level-headed, and she won't have all this crazy talk like Donald Trump and Cruz has.
Larry, we've got it. I appreciate your call. One more from Omaha, Nebraska. Ben, you're on.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
So I'm a millennial. I'm a registered independent. I don't really get the whole party thing. I just wanted to comment how alarmed I am at people willing to put party over country. I feel like I see some of my Republican friends, frankly, going through like the five stages of grief and they're getting to acceptance with Donald Trump now, and it's like they're willing to just forego all their actual principle.
What's their option? What should they do, Ben?
Well, that's a great question. That's really what it comes down to. But I think ultimately, anyone that follows geopolitics and domestic policy and economics objectively would acknowledge that a lot of the options that they're going with in their own party are, you know, not exactly realistic.
Okay, so?
I think it's pretty clearly Hillary at this point would be best for the country if you're looking at Trump versus Hillary.
Wow, we're in some kind of alternate universe. Charles Koch talking about maybe Hillary and Ben saying Republican friends in Omaha maybe look over one more, and I'll bring it to you, Jennifer. Stu in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Stu, you're on.
I just want to say how incredibly disappointed I am in the media in general. Even on your bumps for this, I heard it yesterday, I heard it this morning several times, talking about Sanders' layoffs. I don't know whether you expect him to keep campaign offices in states that the primaries are already done, open, or what that is.
Stu, I take your point, and yet, there is, you can feel it. You can feel the winding down of something going on with Bernie. Am I wrong?
I do not feel it. I am a registered Republican.
I don't mean the passion. The passion is high. No question about that.
Okay. I see many problems with the Clinton campaign. I think that if the Democrats don't want to become as irrelevant as the Republican Party, and again, I say that as a registered Republican, then Clinton needs to change. Well, I think it's too late. I think she's already alienated the entire millennial generation, everyone younger than me and everyone that has felt like they've been shut out of the process. She has not shown the slightest bit of integrity. She doesn't know. People want to say that, where I'm sorry, I believe it was you, Tom, that said people don't know where Trump's, where his values are.
Okay.
Clinton is guilty as can be on that, because she will flip around to say whatever it is that needs to be said. And frankly, she is as much a war hawk as I've seen in the 16 years I've been involved in this process.
Stu, we've got it loud and clear. Some contingent values there, maybe. Bernie Sanders saying, here he was in West Lafayette, Indiana on Wednesday, saying he intends to fight to the convention, but also acknowledge the possibility that he might not win the nomination.
We are in this campaign to win, but if we do not win, we intend to win every delegate that we can, so that when we go to Philadelphia in July, we're going to have the votes to put together the strongest progressive agenda that any political party has ever seen.
Bernie Sanders in Indiana. Jennifer Jacobs, I know Republicans are your main focus, but what about on the Democratic side? Hillary Clinton calling this week for unity with her wins behind her. Can she get it? Stu in Albuquerque says no way. Sanders people won't come to her in the right numbers.
Right. You are exactly right, Tom, when you said that those the layoffs of some of those Sanders staffers signal some sort of a winding down. Oftentimes in campaigns, you know, they're a movable feast. Campaigns will take their staffers with them to the next state.
Yeah, but so many states are behind us. Stu says, look, of course you would let some go.
True, except that he's got the money to keep them on. Yeah. This just signals something. But you're right about the passion. But the other thing is, I have been hearing some things from Bernie Sanders supporters. They're very disappointed that he might be winding down. They actually are looking at Donald Trump. These are those economic voters. They're feeling the pinch. And there was the news this week that the U.S. economy experienced its slowest economic growth in 2 years.
Yep.
And those people are worried about their own pocketbook. And they're looking at Donald Trump and saying, you know, if we can't have Bernie Sanders, maybe he's the alternative we should possibly look at.
We heard it right here this week. If you ignore the economic pain that is out there, the middle class and well beyond, well below, you are missing a whole lot here. Sanders tapped into a lot of that. Wrinkles in that, we'll look at it. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, the city of Cleveland reached a $6 million settlement with the family of Tamir Rice, killed at age 12 by police who thought his toy gun was real.
Cleveland Mayor Frank Jackson.
There is no price that you can put on the life of the loss of a 12-year-old child.
Daytime TV's Kelly Ripa took a few days off after being blindsided, among the last to learn that popular co-host Michael Strahan was being pulled from their show, Live with Kelly and Michael, by the bosses at ABC. When she came back on Tuesday, she talked about respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
So what transpired, though, over the course of a few days has been extraordinary in the sense that it started a much greater conversation about communication and consideration. And most importantly, respect in the workplace.
Watch that space. And soul singer Billy Paul, dead at 81. Here's his biggest hit, the 1972 Grammy Award-winning song Me and Mrs. Jones. In 1972, it was everywhere.
Me and Mrs. Jones. We got a thing.
Wow, there's a way, way, way back machine. We're looking at a week in the news. You can join us. Do you get Donald Trump's foreign policy now? We'll ask David Sanger about that. Can we just watch and watch as North Korea tests missiles? David is just back from Korea. What about the 15-month sentence for Dennis Hastert, serial child molester, the $6 million for Tamir Rice's family in Cleveland? And are you all over Beyonce's Lemonade? Tom Brady's upheld suspension? Are you standing with Kelly Ripa? R-E-S-P-E-C-T? We've got foreign policy to look at in Donald Trump, but Jack, I want to just take one more second on Bernie Sanders because it's so interesting in the interplay between Sanders and Trump, the whole thing. He was talking with NBC's Chuck Todd last Sunday, and Sanders responded to Todd, who asked him why Hillary Clinton was winning the states with the most pronounced income inequality.
17 of the 25 states with the highest levels of income inequality have held primaries. 16 of those 17 states have been won by Hillary Clinton, not by you. Why?
Well, because poor people don't vote. I mean, that's just a fact. That's the sad reality of American society, and that's what we have to transform.
Jack, what do you hear right there?
Yeah, he's right. That is the sad reality. The class skew, as it's been called in American politics, perhaps a turnout gap, perhaps of 25% or more based on class. You know, V.O. Key, the famous political scientist, said in 1949, the blunt truth is that politicians are under no compulsion to pay heed to classes and groups of citizens who do not vote. If they did vote, what would be the difference? Well, a study in 2012 showed that non-voters, that among likely voters, Obama and Romney were tied at 47. Among non-voters, Obama beats him 59-24. That class skew and is American politics takes place in the absence of poor people voting, and that of course tilts the whole playing field upward in a way that that really furthers and solidifies inequality. And, of course, with Sanders, no candidate for president has ever had a program that would be more propitious for the poor than from pre-college to universal health care to infrastructure investments to up and down the line trade deals. His whole program is based on the working poor and the poor, and yet turnout in Democratic primaries is, what, about 11%.
Poor people don't vote, says Bernie Sanders. That's just a fact. Let's turn to foreign policy and Donald Trump. Much heralded address on Wednesday this week at the Mayflower Hotel in Washington. Here he lays out what's been called the Trump Doctrine, essentially America first.
My foreign policy will always put the interests of the American people and American security above all else. Has to be first. Has to be. That will be the foundation of every single decision that I will make.
David Sanger, you were listening from afar, live tweeting as Donald Trump laid out his foreign policy. I'm not sure what you want to call it, but this bag of foreign policy stuff. You talked with him on the Record Times interview about a month ago, made headlines when he said, well, maybe Japan should have nukes. And who else did he say would have?
Japan and South Korea. He also talked about not buying oil from Saudi Arabia at that time. So I think what was interesting, there are several interesting things about this speech. First, there were some things he didn't say that he appeared to have either dropped or downplayed.
Like
since
those, the news. Like,
since Maggie Haberman and I did our 100-minute-long interview with him and allowing South Korea and Japan to obtain nuclear weapons, which would, of course, unmake our alliances in the Pacific and violate the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty.
That's
was
all.
Gone. Mm-hmm. Okay. He kept talking about, and you had a little clip of this at the beginning of the show, how the United States would become reliable. But elsewhere in the speech, he talked about how the key to good foreign policy was being unpredictable.
He always says that. Don't have any idea what you're going to do.
Right. Well, the problem is that while your adversaries, it's a good thing to be unpredictable for your adversaries. Mm-hmm. It's a bad thing when it comes to your allies, who want high predictability.
On the other hand, he said, I'll be reliable. I'll be reliable. And he indicated he would have stuck with Hosni Mubarak maybe in Egypt.
The question is, how do you do both? And if you stick with Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, and now the Obama administration is actually sticking with somebody who is very Mubarak-like in General
Sisi. After all the tumult, yes.
Right. So what strikes me after our long conversation with Mr. Trump, after listening to his speech, is the following, that he has a foreign policy that right now is transactional in nature. Mm-hmm. He's approaching foreign policy the way one might approach a real estate deal, not surprisingly.
Business.
Okay. The difficulty with this is alliances are the kinds of things that you spend a long time nurturing because you don't know what the situation's going to be when you need to call upon it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what it sounds like he was moving away from. And in this speech, I think he recognized that he had overreached a little in that and was beginning to try to draw the allies back in. The question is it too late for that?
I mean, maybe listen to this. You know, he said these countries have to pay their own way when it comes to defense. And, you know, this isn't a month ago. This is this week. Here's Trump.
The countries we are defending must pay for the cost of this defense. And if not, the U.S. must be prepared to let these countries defend themselves. We have no choice.
David, is that the breadth you need in understanding of what foreign policy is about for a superpower?
It's a slice of it. I think it's going to be one that's going to be very popular. It's a critique that Barack Obama has made. It was Mr. Obama who made the reference to the Saudis being free riders.
Yeah, and the percentage of GNP paid by those countries in Europe, much smaller than ours.
Only a few countries that are in NATO pay the 2% of their GDP toward defense that they've committed to paying. So he has properly identified that problem. The question is, has he properly identified the solution to that problem? Because just yelling at them about needing to pay for more
or
of their defense—
or threatening to cut them out.
Or
cut
threatening
them off.
To cut them out. So then the question is, we have to remember that in the world is not a bipolar place, okay? Mm-hmm. If they get cut out, they've got to go look to other countries that they can go sign up with. And there are only two out there, China and Russia. Okay, now Russia is a declining power. China is a rising power. But you're already seeing some hedging activity. You know,
Europeans hedging toward China?
And you know, I was just in South Korea, as you mentioned.
Yep.
The Chinese spend a lot of time with the South Koreans right now, given the economic ties between those countries, which are much deeper and much bigger than China and North Korea. We've kind of missed it.
Mm-hmm. There it is. Justin in Columbia, Tennessee. Justin, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I believe Donald Trump lacks, honestly, the finesse to be a global arbitrator. I'm sorry, but we are global citizens. America, yes, I'm an American, but we are a global economy. We are a global people that it is not about America first, screw everybody else. And honestly, I feel like even on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton has exactly the same mindset, but just with a much more eloquent way of stating it.
Justin, what about all those Americans who feel, though, that, yes, it's a globalized world, but they've been screwed? You can feel that sentiment all over the place on the campaign trail this year.
Yes, definitely. And you mentioned that poor people don't vote. Well, the poor people, more than anything, the poor people around the world don't have a voice, but they're the ones that go off and fight and die and give their lives and struggle just to survive. And they are too busy surviving to make sense of this world that we live in around them. They're too busy. They can't parse all the information out there and figure out who is actually going to do what is necessary.
Justin, we've got it. I think we've got it right there. And I so vibe with the spirit of what you're saying, with that America First feeling strong in the Trump camp right now, and people are resonating who have lost their jobs in that system. Bonnie in Atlanta. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you see?
Listen, I think it's a mean world, and we need a mean president. I was living in New York City on 9/11, and I believe Donald Trump is the one we need in there.
Will a mean president make a better world or even a meaner world?
I think it's dog eat dog at this point, and it's down to, you know, who's going to do who in.
Wow.
I was up there. I had lived up there for years.
Yeah.
And on that day, I was absolutely dumbstruck.
Bonnie, we've got it. I'm not going to forget your quote. It's a mean world, and we need a mean president. Jack Beatty, that is a maybe not a brand new American tone, but if that's where we're headed, that is not the post-World War II grand, munificent America embracing the planet.
Well, of course, Trump says we are not that country anymore. In 1950, we had half the world economy. Now we're down to, what, 20%, 25%? We can't bear all the world's burdens. We have to look out after ourselves. And he applies that sort of negotiating, you know, business, real estate business model to international affairs, as if we could just, you know, if the other guy doesn't want to make a deal, we just walk away. Unfortunately, you can't walk away from Iran. You can't walk away from China. You can't, you know, so the model doesn't fit. And, you know, I understand Bonnie, but what does she make of his lying? The man, you know, he, according to the Washington Post, he told 8 repeated falsehoods in just the 16 hours after his triumph the other night. And in his foreign policy speech, it was full of them. He said he claimed he was opposed to the Iraq war before it began. There's no evidence of that. He said that the Islamic State was exporting oil from Libya. No evidence of that. He went on about terrorists coming over our border. No evidence of that. He just lies all the time. And he's not worthy in that respect, it seems to me, of the confidence of people who want a tough president. Because who knows what he's going to be at any given moment.
David Singer, it's a mean world. We need a mean president. Our Atlanta caller, Bonnie.
Well, you certainly would want a tough president. But toughness sometimes means recognizing the degree to which we are interdependent in this world. And if you no longer have 50% of the world economy, but you're still the biggest economic player, and if you don't want to go out and police the world and be the one that goes into Iraq, Libya,
big
Afghanistan, Syria,
yeah,
you name your list, then you need allies along the way who are willing to pick up that load. Because it's not as if we're not involved around the world, that you can just hit the pause button like you do on your video player and the world stops.
Yeah, no question. Jim in Spencer, Iowa. Jim, you're on the air.
Well, hi, Tom. Yeah, I just had to laugh when I heard Trump saying that Hillary was playing the woman card, because he's been playing the hothead card since day one. You know, he plays it every day. And, you know, if, for example, you can't play to your base when you're doing politics, you're missing the whole point.
Jim, our time is short, but you got a gem right there. The women card, the hothead card, Jennifer Jacobs. Does that work for Donald Trump? Does that work in the general election to go after Hillary on gender, women card?
It just might. Going back to the foreign policy thing, I just wanted to add, when we talk to Donald Trump's supporters, they often say that they think he would deal from a position of strength. And interestingly, the reaction from some world leaders, I don't know if you saw CNN had a news story where they interviewed people in Russia and said that he received some of his most glowing reviews on that foreign policy speech from people in Russia, saying that they think he's a bright person and talented and forceful. And in that speech, Trump had said,
but we're voting as Americans here, please, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know. And then Hillary Clinton came out with her own woman card that she was distributing, her campaign was distributing.
Embracing it, saying, yes,
exactly.
The country's women, let's have a card, why not?
She turned that right back around very quickly.
Let me get one more here. Don in Bloomington, Illinois. Our time is very short, Don. You're on. Hello, Don, are you there? Yeah.
I'd like to say something about Dennis Hastert.
Sad week.
You know, in 2000, the Democrats got pretty much screwed because of allegations of Bill Clinton and I think it's really sad that this has happened, and I think that you should like have a show about it. And
well, but it happened, right? I mean, these things happened far in his past, but they happened. These young men were abused by Dennis Hastert. He's headed to prison for 15 months. Is that wrong, Don?
That he got sent to prison?
Is it wrong that he's going? Yeah.
No, I mean, I was a victim of sexual abuse when I was a kid, and I just don't think that, you know, there's enough attention to it, and that's all I have to say. Thank you, Tom.
I appreciate your call, Don. We have the U.S. Attorney Zachary Farden, top prosecutor on this in the Northern District of Illinois, saying his legend and legacy are gone. Dennis Hastert, former Speaker of the House, and in its place, he said, are a broken and humiliated man. Prosecutor said, that is as it should be. Make of it what you will, but we saw him in the walker, in the wheelchair. He's headed to prison for 15 months. Sorry for those young men. Dennis Hastert, former Speaker of the House. What a week. And Beyonce running behind the whole thing with Lemonade, her big visual album out this week. Cultural event in itself. Jennifer Jacobs, national political reporter for Bloomberg Politics. It's been great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jennifer.
You're welcome.
David Sanger, just back in the country from Korea. So good to have you with us. Thanks for joining us today, right here in the studio with eyes wide open, David.
Great to be with you and with you, Jennifer and Jack.
Jack Beatty, great as always to have you.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Keep on running, 'cause the winner don't quit on themselves.